Good morning. This is Kim Harden reading the Decatur Herald and Review for Friday, April 18th, 2025. I'm going to start with a story on education in Shelbyville, written by Valerie Wells. Title of the story is Aberle Leaps Bounds Ahead. A picture of Tim Aberle assisting students starting to brainstorm a final project during the English Honors class at Shelbyville High School on Wednesday, April 16th. Aberle is one of 30 finalists for the 2025 Golden Apple Awards for Excellence in Teaching. Tim Aberle was drawn to teaching from a young age. He realized by the end of high school that his love of learning, especially history and literature, made teaching the right career for him. "I'm 10 years into the profession," said Aberle, who teaches at Shelbyville High School, "and every year I feel like I've grown in leaps and bounds from the previous year." Aberle is one of 30 finalists for the Golden Apple Excellence in Teaching Award for high school educators, one out of more than 470 nominations. A native of Fairbury, Aberle met his wife Stephanie at Eastern Illinois University. She is a speech therapist. They have two children, Adeline, 5, and Henry, who is almost 3. "I found out about the award when I got a notification in the fall that someone had nominated me," Aberle said. "At first, I got a nice little charge from that somebody out there had nominated me for this really cool thing." Former Shelbyville High School student Kara Tipsword nominated Aberle for the award. "He had helped her become a Golden Apple Scholar. He is the only reason I made it through high school and why I'm thriving right now," she said. "He definitely changed my life. I attribute a lot of my success to him, whether he knows it or not. He is the reason why I am the person I am today." Aberle, she said, is why she chose teaching for a career and why she chose Eastern Illinois University, his alma mater. "He sang its high praises," she said, "and I thought if it made him the teacher that he was, that's where I want to be." In describing Aberle and his influence, Tipsword gets emotional. "When she was going through depression," she said, "he noticed and he offered a listening ear, and he was like that for all of his students. Her classmates all knew if they needed someone to talk to, he would be available. He was the person we trusted," she said. "All of my friends, he was the one that we turned to." Nominees have to fill out an application, including several essays in response to prompts, such as what their philosophy as teaching is. Aberle said he thought if someone took the trouble to nominate him, he should do his part as well. One of the things he had to do was submit letters of recommendations from administrators and colleagues, something his principal, Kyle Ladd, was only too happy to provide. "Tim's intentions are sincere in everything he does," Ladd said, "and in doing so has always provided a wonderful example for others. He is positive, he is purposeful in his actions, and he has always been able to develop a heartfelt rapport with staff and students." "One of the things that Aberle does," Ladd said, "is lead a future teacher cohort of high school students who either know they want to become teachers or who are exploring it as an option. He is what experienced teachers would expect to be and what new teachers should aspire to be one day," Ladd said. "Flexibility is a major part of his teaching philosophy. His ability to adapt to change and to focus on students' needs. It may sound cliche, but I try to remember who I am here for, who I am serving, and who I'm here to help, and that's the students," he said. "I have my job, I have my assignment, I'm here to teach history and English, and that's all good, but I try to remember who I'm here for, and I try my best to meet that student where they are, and try my best to give them what they need." He said he has to remember that while the day's lesson is important to his students, other things happening in their lives are more important, and he has to consider their needs. "I need to be there for them and to help them with whatever hurdle there is for them," he said. "My teaching philosophy boils down to prioritizing my teaching relationship with my students, prioritizing how I can be in a position to help them with what they need and where they're at. Amid the challenges facing education today, it is more important than ever to celebrate the educators who go above and beyond for their students and get results," said Alicia Wickler, Chief Executive Officer of Golden Apple. "These finalists remind us of the profound impact a dedicated teacher can have on shaping futures and building strong communities. We are proud to honor their extraordinary impact." The selected 2020 2025 Golden Apple Award recipients will be notified in the spring. Northwestern University provides a spring sabbatical to award recipients at no cost. Each recipient receives a $5,000 cash reward. Award recipients become fellows of the Golden Apple Academy of Educators, a community of educators who play an important role in preparing the next generation of teachers in the Golden Apple Scholars and Accelerators program, initiatives dedicated to addressing the teacher shortage in Illinois. Former student Taylor Vidmar, who is a tutor at Richland Community College and will be an adjunct professor of reading and writing in the fall semester there, remembers how encouraging and even tempered Aberle was with her class. She was his student in American history at Central A&M High School during his first year of teaching, and again the next year for world history. It was something all of the students noticed, Vidmar said. He'd never say, "That's wrong." He'd say, "You're on the right track. You're close. That's a great idea." He never let students get discouraged or give up on themselves or feel they weren't good enough. He was very thoughtful. "I learned so much in that class." She remembers the students cooking up an April Fool's joke to play on him, decorating the classroom for a birthday party for Aberle, and greeting him as he came in with a surprise. He laughed and thanked them and said it wasn't actually his birthday and took the joke with good grace. "He was very well liked," she said. "Everybody loved his class. He has always been in a good mood and never raised his voice at a student. He has a very mild temper, even when we were pushing his buttons." In news from the State House, Durbin is mum, but money is talking. Fundraising may hint at 2026 plans. A story by Brendan Moore out of Springfield. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin isn't quite ready to talk about his future. He made that clear to reporters who peppered him with questions following events earlier this week in East St. Louis and Springfield, where he instead spoke about the consequences of cuts to safety net programs like Social Security and of the imposition of blanket tariffs on friends and foes alike. But sometimes in politics, money does all the talking. Durbin raised just $42,695 during the first 3 months of 2025, according to a quarterly fundraising report filed with the Federal Elections Commission earlier this week. The report is figuratively giving voice to longstanding speculation that the 80-year-old will opt to retire instead of seeking re-election in 2026. Durbin, for what it's worth, downplayed the small amount, joking with a reporter who asked if there were tea leaves to be read, that, "Well, if you want to send me a check, I'll give you an address." And a campaign spokesperson also reiterated that Durbin, who has about $1.63 million cash on hand, remains an active fundraiser. He has been actively helping out his colleagues that are in cycle, has scheduled an annual Prairie PAC weekend in Chicago this June, is sending out digital fundraising asks on a normal schedule, and held his latest public fundraising event on March 24th in D.C., the spokesperson said. Durbin said he will make an announcement on his 2026 plans soon. He could decide to run again. As the number two Senate Democrat, he can raise campaign cash quickly, and despite some evidence that his party's base is in search of generational change, Durbin would be a heavy favorite to win both the Democratic primary and the general election. That being said, Durbin's latest fundraising numbers, to state the obvious, are not those of someone who is gearing up for re-election. At least that is the prevailing thought, both inside the Beltway and in political circles in Illinois. Just look to 6 years ago for a comparison. Durbin raised more than $500,000 and had about $2.4 million in the bank during the same fundraising quarter before his re-election campaign in 2020, according to the FEC. Durbin ultimately raised and spent more than $10 million in that election cycle, underscoring the fact that even in a deep blue state like Illinois, where he ran unopposed in the primary and had a non-competitive general election matchup, campaigns are multi-million dollar enterprises. This is understood by would-be candidates lining up to run for Durbin's seat should he retire. U.S. Representative Raja Krishnamurthy, a Democrat of Schaumburg, raised $3.1 million last quarter, bringing his campaign war chest up to an eye-popping $19.4 million. Again, money talks. Krishnamurthy has long been pegged as a future Senate candidate with his outsized bank account, and that's only been reinforced by his frequent travel to parts of Illinois that lay far outside of his suburban Chicago congressional district. U.S. Representative Robin Kelly, Democrat Matheson, also believed to be eyeing Durbin's seat, announced raising about $186,000. She has about $2 million in her campaign account. U.S. Representative Lauren Underwood, Democrat Naperville, who recently sent out a fundraising email featuring a poll showing her leading a hypothetical Senate primary in which Durbin isn't a candidate, raised about $393,000 and had about a $1.1 million in the bank. Illinois Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, who told Lee Enterprises in March that she would be interested in the Senate race should Durbin retire, opened a federal political action committee called Level Up in January. Fundraising numbers for the PAC were not available. It is safe to say that it pertains to 2026 in the world of Illinois politics. All eyes are on Durbin, and to a lesser extent, Governor J.B. Pritzker, who has yet to say whether or not he will seek a third term as the state's chief executive in 2026. Both Durbin and Pritzker declined to participate in the Cook County Democratic Party's pre-slating session earlier this week. The session was for candidates to make their pitch to committee people in the state's most populous county ahead of slating the 2026 Democratic primary later this summer. Many are eagerly awaiting their decisions. The widespread belief in state political circles is that Pritzker, a potential Democratic candidate for president in 2028, will run for re-election in 2026. With that, talk about the governor's race has largely focused on if the state struggling Republican Party will be able to mount a viable candidate to run against Pritzker, a self-funded billionaire businessman turned politician. But on the Senate side, Durbin's advanced age and sagging fundraising continue to drive the belief that he will ultimately retire, and the shadow primary has been taking shape for months as candidates raise money, appear at political events across the state, and seek to line up support among key power brokers and constituencies in the case Durbin doesn't run. Just last weekend, Kelly, Krishnamurthy, and Stratton all appeared at the Rock Island County Democrats' annual fundraising dinner. All three were strong and received a few standing ovations from the audience of 325 people, according to Porter McNeil, a Quad Cities-based Democratic political consultant. Durbin appeared too, but via recorded video. What is playing out now is an awkward dance as candidates gear up for what would likely be a crowded, bruising open primary, while not stepping on Durbin's toes as he makes his decision. Again, Durbin could decide to run again and lay waste to, or at least delay, the best-laid plans of those who would like to succeed him. But his fundraising says a lot. Pick whatever cliché phrase you want. Money is the mother's milk of politics. As the late former California Assembly Speaker Jesse Unruh put it, or more succinctly, follow the money, a phrase popularized by a 1976 film, All the President's Men. Either way, money tells a story, even if no one's talking. A side story on fundraising tidbits. Two Central Illinois members of Congress continue to post impressive fundraising numbers. U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski, Democrat Springfield, raised more than $538,000 last quarter, bringing her campaign war chest up to $2.1 million. U.S. Representative Darren LaHood, Republican Peoria, raised more than $824,000 and has nearly $5.9 million in the bank. Budzinski has already announced her intention to seek re-election. Many Illinois Republicans would like to see LaHood give the Senate race a look if Durbin retires, but the politically astute Republican is more likely to run for re-election to his heavily Republican House seat than mount a statewide campaign in deep blue Illinois in a challenging midterm year. Meanwhile, Representative Eric Sorensen, Democrat Moline, raised nearly $326,000 last quarter. He has about $322,000 on hand. He started the cycle with only $113,000 after spending nearly $5 million in the 2024 campaign cycle. Sorensen represents Illinois' 17th congressional district, which is the state's most competitive. However, Sorensen was not included in an initial target list released by the House Republican campaign arm earlier this year, indicating that, at least for now, he is off the national radar. Down in southern Illinois, U.S. Representative Mike Bost, Republican Murfreesboro, raised about $148,000 last quarter, bringing his total cash on hand to $350,000. Bost won his primary in 2024 by less than 3,000 votes against former gubernatorial candidate and state Senator Darren Bailey, who has not yet made his 2026 plans known. Bailey, however, did no fundraising last quarter and had just $1.8 million in his federal campaign account, per his filing with the FEC. $1.18 in his federal campaign account, per his filing with the FEC. His state account had just $2,805, according to Illinois Board of Elections. Annie Ma, Mayika Seminara, and Christopher Keller of the Associated Press in Washington write a story about higher education. Students file to challenge loss of visas. At first, the Bar Association for Immigration Attorneys received inquiries from a couple of students a day. Then the calls flooded in. Hundreds of students said they lost legal status and sought advice on what to do. Several international students who had their visas revoked in recent weeks filed lawsuits against the Trump administration, arguing the government denied them due process when it suddenly took away their permission to be in the United States. The federal government's termination of students' legal status left hundreds of scholars at risk of detention and deportation. Their schools range from private universities to large public institutions and small liberal arts colleges. In lawsuits against the Department of Homeland Security, students argued the government lacked justification to cancel their visa or terminate their legal status. Why are visas canceled? At least 600 students at more than 90 colleges and universities had their visas revoked or their legal status terminated in recent weeks, according to an Associated Press review. Advocacy groups collecting reports from colleges say hundreds more students could be caught in the crackdown. NAFSA, an Association of International Educators, says as many as 1,300 students lost visas or had their status terminated based on reports from colleges. Visas can be canceled for a number of reasons. Colleges say some students were singled out over infractions as minor as traffic violations, some long in the past. Other students say it's unclear why they were targeted. The timing and uniformity of these terminations leave little question that DHS has adopted a nationwide policy, whether written or not, of mass termination of students' legal status, ACLU of Michigan attorneys wrote in a lawsuit on behalf of students at Wayne State University and the University of Michigan. In New Hampshire, a federal judge last week issued a restraining order in the case of a Dartmouth College computer science student from China, Zhaoqin Liu, whose status was terminated by the government. Attorneys filed similar challenges in federal court in Georgia and California. The Departments of Homeland Security and State did not respond to messages seeking comment. In some high-profile cases, including the detention of Columbia University activist Mahmoud Khalil, President Donald Trump's administration argues it should be allowed to deport non-citizens over involvement in pro-Palestinian activism. But in the vast majority of visa revocations, colleges say there is no indication affected students had a role in protests. What you're seeing happening with international students is really a piece of the much greater security that the Trump administration is bringing to bear on immigrants of all different categories, said Michelle Mittelstadt, Director of Public Affairs at the Migration Policy Institute. How do these visas work? About 1.1 million international students were in the U.S. last year. Students in other countries must meet a series of requirements to obtain a student visa, usually an F-1. After gaining admission to a U.S. school, students go through an application and interview process at a U.S. embassy or consulate. Students on an F-1 visa must show they have enough financial support for their course of study in the U.S. They have to remain in good standing with their academic program and generally are limited to their ability to work off campus during their academic program. Entry visas are managed by the State Department. Once they're in the U.S., international students' legal status is overseen by the Student and Exchange Visitor Program under the Department of Homeland Security. In recent weeks, leaders at many colleges learned the legal residency status of some of their international students was terminated when college staff checked a database managed by Homeland Security. In the past, college officials say legal statuses typically were updated after colleges told the government the students no longer studied at the school. Students face uncertainty. Foreigners subject to removal proceedings usually are sent a notice on when they appear in immigration court, but lawyers say affected students didn't receive notices, leaving them unsure of the next steps. Historically, students who had their visas revoked were allowed to keep their legal residency status and complete their studies. The lack of a valid entry visa only limited their ability to leave the U.S. and return, something they could reapply for with the State Department. But if a student loses legal residency status, they risk detention by immigration authorities. Some students already left the country, abandoning their studies to avoid arrest. Higher education leaders worry the arrests and visa revocations could discourage students overseas from pursuing higher education in the United States. The lack of clarity on what is leading to revocations can create a sense of fear among students, said Sarah Spreitzer, Vice President of Government Relations at the American Council on Education. The very public actions that are being taken by ICE and the Department of Homeland Security around some of these students, where they are removing these students from their homes or from their streets, that's not usually done unless there's a security issue when the student visa is revoked, she said. The threat of this very quickly removal is something that's new. Some colleges reemphasize travel precautions, recommending students carry their passports and other immigration documents with them. Among the students who filed lawsuits is a Georgia Tech PhD student who is supposed to graduate May 5th with a job offer to join the faculty. His attorney, Charles Cook, said the student likely was targeted for termination because an unpaid traffic fine from when the student lent his car to a friend. Ultimately, the violation was dismissed. We have case after case after case exactly like that where there is no underlying crime, said Cook, who represents 17 students in the federal lawsuit. In national news, Christopher Ruggeber of the Associated Press writes the story, IMF, tariffs weaken the economy. Trump policies feed global fears of slowdown and inflation. Surging U.S. tariffs will weaken the global economy and push up inflation this year, according to projections to be released next week by the International Monetary Fund. The IMF's managing director, Christina Georgieva, said Thursday that the Trump administration's sharp increases in duties caused global uncertainty to spike. The import taxes will slow global growth but not cause a worldwide recession, she said. The details of the IMF's outlook will be issued Tuesday. The world economy's resilience is being tested by the reboot of the global trading system that threatens to cause turbulence in financial markets, Georgieva said. That turbulence has been playing out in financial markets for weeks now, especially on Wall Street, which has experienced wild swings from day to day and oftentimes even hour to hour. The IMF chief also echoed some Trump administration concerns. She called on countries to reduce their tariffs and lower other barriers to trade, a process that she said stalled out in the past decade after making steady progress for many years after World War II. Trade distortions, tariff and non-tariff barriers have fed negative perceptions of a multilateral system seen to have failed to deliver a level playing field, she said. This feeling of unfairness in some places feeds the narrative we play by the rules while others game the system without penalty. Georgieva said tariffs cause uncertainty, which can be costly. Due to the complexity of supply chains, the cost of a single item can be affected by tariffs in dozens of countries, she said. Increased trade barriers also tend to immediately affect growth, and while it can lead to more domestic production, that takes time to implement, she said. In its most recent projections issued in January, the IMF forecast the world economy to grow nominally faster and for inflation to come down, though it warned that outlook was clouded by President Donald Trump's policies. including tax cuts and increased tariffs on foreign imports. The Washington-based lending agency said at the time it expected the world economy to grow 3.3% this year and next, up from 3.2% in 2024. Global inflation, which surged after the COVID-19 pandemic, disrupted global supply chains and caused shortages and higher prices, was forecast to fall from 5.7% in 2024 to 4.2% this year and 3.5% in 2026. However, in a blog that accompanied those projections, the fund's chief economist, Pierre-Olivier Gorinchas, wrote that the policies Trump had promised to introduce are likely to push inflation higher in the near term. Those forecasts from January are expected to change, possibly significantly, as Trump's trade war has escalated in recent months, particularly with the U.S. biggest trade partner, China. Trump paused or pulled back on many of his tariff threats, leading to more volatility in the stock market, but has been in tit-for-tat tariff battle with China and shows no signs of backing down. Each time Trump raised tariffs on China, Beijing retaliated with tariffs on U.S. imports. The IMF is a 191-nation lending organization that works to promote economic growth and financial stability and to reduce global poverty. Other stories in U.S. politics... written by John Sewer of the AP. Fire is the latest example of violence. A string of partisan attacks alarms officials of both major parties. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro angrily called for an end to rising political violence just hours after a man broke into the governor's mansion and set it on fire, forcing Shapiro and his family to flee into the night. It was the latest in a string of partisan political attacks in the United States. This kind of violence is becoming far too common in our society, and I don't give a damn if it's coming from one particular side or the other, Shapiro said. It has to stop. While police have not said what might have motivated the April 13th attack, court documents say the suspect admitted he hated Shapiro and plotted to beat him with a hammer. The attacker basically wasn't a fan of anybody, Republican President Donald Trump said, and certainly a thing like that cannot be allowed to happen. Here's a look at other outbursts of political violence around the country in recent years. New Mexico Republican headquarters were torched. In March, a fire damaged the entryway to the New Mexico Republican Party headquarters, and authorities investigated the incident as arson. Incendiary materials were found at the scene, and spray paint on the side of the building read ICE equals KKK, an apparent reference to the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which has ramped up deportation efforts against people living in the country illegally. Investigators arrested a suspect this month. Elon Musk's Tesla properties set ablaze. In recent months, Elon Musk's electrical vehicle company has become a target since Trump put Musk in charge of slashing government spending. Cybertrucks were torched, and bullets and Molotov cocktails were aimed at Tesla showrooms. Assassination attempts. At a Pennsylvania campaign rally in July, Trump was grazed on the ear by one of several bullets fired by a gunman who shot and killed one Trump supporter and badly wounding two others before police killed him. In September, a man with a rifle apparently plotted to kill Trump but was discovered in some shrubbery near the president's golf course in Florida and arrested. Democratic National Committee office shot up. A volley of BB pellets and gunshots were fired at the glass front door and a window of Democratic National Committee office in Arizona on three separate occasions last fall. Authorities said a man later arrested had more than 120 guns and 250,000 rounds of ammunition in his home. Pelosi's husband attacked. The husband of then-House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat California, was bludgeoned with a hammer by a man who broke into their San Francisco home in 2022. The man later admitted during trial that he planned to hold the speaker hostage and that his plan was to end what he viewed as government corruption. Candidate target. Current Louisville Mayor Craig Greenberg, a Democrat, was the target of a shooting attempt at his campaign headquarters on February 14, 2022, but was uninjured through a bullet though a bullet grazed his sweater. The man who shot at him was later convicted and sentenced to 17 years and 6 months in prison. Capital riot. Extremist groups provoked an unprecedented assault on the nation's democracy by storming the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, to protest the 2020 presidential election results and Trump's defeat. After winning back the White House, Trump issued a sweeping grant of clemency to all 1,500-plus people charged in the riot. Kidnapping plot. Anti-government extremists were arrested in 2020 in what authorities said was a plot to kidnap Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan and start a civil war. Two men portrayed as the leaders were convicted of conspiracy 2 years later. Shooting at a Republican baseball practice. An attacker opened fire with a rifle on Republican lawmakers practicing for a charity baseball game in 2017 in Northern Virginia, critically wounding U.S. Representative Steve Scalise of Louisiana. Authorities said the shooter, whom police killed, was fueled by rage against Trump and GOP legislators. That concludes part one of my reading today. I'll be back in a few minutes for part two of the Decatur Herald and Review.